the enemy list, and this rainbow that they gave me the idea for, I wrote this little poem. Lives of great men all remind us, greatness takes no easy way. All the heroes of tomorrow are the heretics of today. Socrates and Galileo, John Brown, Thoreau, Christ and Debs, heard the night cry, down with traitors, and the dawn shout, up the rebs. Nothing ever seems to bust them. Gallows, crosses, prison bars. Though we try to readjust them, there they are among the stars. Lives of great men all remind us we can write our names on high, and departing leave behind us thumbprints in the FBI.
The words of Yip Harburg, and that does it for today's program, which was actually produced for radio in 1996 with Errol Maitland and Dan Coughlin. Special thanks to Gary Helm, Brother Shine, and Julie Drizin. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warner, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias, our executive directors, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Stelly, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Turrieri, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM Community Radio.
Are you ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Contribute to KBOO's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, going now until December 31st. You can double your donation by donating today and have your contribution match dollar for dollar up to $20,000.
Are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is KBOO News Year in Review. Between now and the new year, we'll be looking back at some of our favorite and most important stories from 2024. I'm Althea Billings, News Director. In this episode, we'll be looking back at our special election series, Running on Air. For 2.5 months, we put out a second daily show with a handful of the candidates from each district on our show each day. It was an enormous amount of effort, but it paid off. We got to have a unique look into the personalities and policies that would come to lead Portland into its next chapter. Today, we're going back to the episodes that featured the winners from District 3, which represents Southeast Portland. The winners from that district were Tiffany Koyama Lane, Angelita Murillo, and Steve Novick. We'll be hearing from all of them from across the different episodes that they were a part of. Before we get into the meat of all of that, we want to thank everybody who has helped to contribute to our end-of-year membership drive so far. Our goal is to raise $75,000 before January 1st, and we can't do it without your help. The theme of this drive is Catalog of Connections, and that's something that KBOO brings to you every weekday. Do you want to be connected to your community and the issues that matter the most? That's what you tune into KBOO for. We can't do it without you. So if KBOO has meant something to you this year, consider supporting us with a donation. You can go online to kboo.fm/give to donate. You can also text the word KBOO to 44321, and we would love to be mailed a check. Our address is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thank you so much. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Corey Elia.
I'm your host, Althea Billings.
I'm your host, Don Merrill.
Why did you decide to run for city council?
My name is Tiffany Koyama-Lane. My pronouns are she, her. I am in my 16th year as a public school educator. I teach third grade at Sunnyside Environmental School. I'm a mom to a 7-year-old and an 8-year-old. I am a community organizer. I am a leader in my union. And I am so excited to be running for the new city council, District 3.
Hi, everyone. This is Angelita, or Angelita, for those of you that speak Spanish. I do think that I have a lot of lived and professional experience in some of the most important issues in our city. In my day job, I'm an anti-hunger policy advocate, which means I work on the SNAP program, food stamps, child nutrition, all that sort of stuff. And I work with state legislators and community to help pass policies that are informed and dictated by community. As far as lived experience goes, I am a Paraguayan immigrant. I moved to the U.S. when I was 4 years old, and I think that with the potential Trump presidency and also with Democrats who are actually becoming quite anti-immigrant at this time as well, we need people who can be champions for our immigrant communities here locally and make sure we're protecting our sanctuary city laws. I also have lived experience having been homeless in the city of Portland for a little under a year when I was in college. So I know exactly what it's like to experience those things on the ground and also to pass policy that is transformative. I'm here to champion unapologetically working class and poor people in the city of Portland. That's who I'm here to advocate for. And I'm prepared to do that.
Steve, what about you?
Well, I was on the city council once before, 8 years ago, and one of the reasons I'm running is I think that it will be useful in a brand new council and brand new form of government to have some folks that have not just experience getting things done in City Hall, but the humility that comes with experience. And I know that I don't have some silver bullet answer to the big problems we face, but I've got the patience and discipline to look at how we're spending money, try to figure out what we're doing that's effective and cost effective, and what we're doing that's not, and try to do more of the former and less of the latter. And there's some specific like passion projects that people can see if they look at my website, novicforportland.com.
Well, you are all running in District 3, which covers Southeast Portland. I wonder, what are some of the things that you think are the most pressing issues facing District 3? I want to start with Steve on this one.
Well, I think that folks, for one thing, it varies neighborhood to neighborhood. I mean, there's some neighborhoods in District 3 that still have a real violent crime problem. There's others that probably the biggest crime problem is, you know, stolen cars. I think that everybody in the city is concerned about the homelessness crisis. Everybody would like to see, actually, crime's been going down, but people are still concerned about crimes. People want to have a nice, safe city, and people are concerned about housing affordability. There's one specific project I want to mention. In some parts of this district, we have pretty decent public transit. 82nd Avenue, we could have better public transit. There's a proposal to have bus rapid transit on 82nd. And I've been calling for the Portland Clean Energy Fund to invest in that. The project is short tens of millions of dollars in local match. And I think that since transportation is the biggest source of carbon emissions, and since low-income people spend a lot of their money on transportation, having clean, affordable sources of transportation is exactly the kind of thing that the Clean Energy Fund should be investing in.
Yeah, I think that there is a few different issues. I'm really interested in transportation and public transportation for our district. I think on Sandy Boulevard, I would love to see a Rose Lane bus line so that folks can have access to rapid transit. As someone who's a pedestrian and a person who has a bike and actually has never driven my own car, I would love to make sure that public transit is accessible again, because we're seeing that most of the bus lines are coming every 20 minutes or so. They're just not as frequent and accessible as they used to be. I also frankly think that bike and pedestrian safety has been neglected in certain areas of Outer East Portland. I'm particularly thinking of 82nd Avenue, where we have such high fatalities on that strip. You know, there's a lot of transformations that are happening there in conjunction with Metro, and I would love to see that road slowed down a little bit, make sure that we have some physical barriers to keep pedestrian and bicyclists safe. On Cesare Chavez Boulevard, we had a beloved teacher whose life was actually taken by a vehicle because she was waiting at the bus stop on Cesare Chavez near Belmont. And the sidewalk was very narrow, and a drunk driver went up on the sidewalk and hit her while she was sitting there waiting for the bus. So I think that those are things that the city has direct oversight over that we can make that will connect the city and make it more accessible to everyone and make sure that people like Jeannie have a life with dignity and that they get to safely take the bus and go home to their families.
What do you think is an issue facing Portland that is not getting enough attention?
I believe we need to be talking more about climate justice. It is something that always our most vulnerable community members are going to be victims of. As we saw with the heat dome, it was BIPOC elderly folks that were the ones who in bulk lost their lives. We need to be thinking about how we are protecting our PSEF funds, our Portland Clean Energy Funds, and making sure that they're going towards things that make us more climate resilient in Portland. I also bring a labor perspective, and I'm thinking about how many big green jobs are brought in through this. I've been talking to folks that have been doing organizing for so many years around the dangerous CEI hub. We have tanks that are holding hazardous materials. We need to do something about those. And we also need to be really serious about protecting our beautiful river that runs right through our city.
Yeah, I think the top priority that I've heard when I'm talking with folks on the street, when I'm knocking doors, has been affordable rent. We have a really high density apartment building situation in District 3. A lot of folks live in apartments mostly here. There are certainly homeowners, but I think those folks are in a more secure position. I think a lot of renters want to make sure that there is affordable and accessible rent. I was just talking with some of the local unions where their workers work at the convention center or at the local hotels or anywhere downtown doing more of that service work, and their employees can't afford to live in the city. They are busing out an hour every morning, an hour back home after a 12-hour shift just to get a chance to work in the city, and people deserve to live and work in the same place and to have access to good transportation on top of that. So I'm really interested in looking at things like RealPage, the AI software that landlords are using to artificially inflate rent prices across the country. I think that's something that Portland could look into to potentially ban to ensure that rent prices are actually fair and feasible for the average person. And I would echo a lot of what Terry said as well. I think the need for public infrastructure, transportation, addressing pedestrian deaths, addressing the fact that we have so many people who are unhoused in our district as well is really crucial.
I agree with something that Chris was talking about, which is affordability and wages and making sure that the folks who run our city, who work here, can also afford to live here. I was just on the strike line with Fred Meyer workers during my duty-free lunch every day last week, who are fighting for fair wages, safe working conditions, and for being able to afford to live here in Portland. A lot of the folks that are leaving Portland are families. They're families with kids. We need to make sure that, at my school, there is someone who works in the cafeteria and actually runs it and has shared with me that on top of that job, she also has to work a second job delivering for Amazon in order to pay her rent. This is not okay, and we need to make sure that our workers can live in Portland and also thrive.
It's very easy to talk about what's being done wrong here in Portland, but this next question actually is, what do you think the city is doing really well right now, and how would you continue that, or how do you see yourself fitting into that?
I know something that's incredibly important is that the city and county are able to coordinate and work together. I've been spending a lot of time meeting with folks that are currently on the county commission or are on the ballot to be on the county commission, and what I am hearing is a feeling of optimism. I just had coffee with Julie Brim Edwards, and she was saying that she feels like the relationship between the city and county is going in the right direction, that she feels like progress is being made in coordination, and she feels really optimistic. And so that's something that I'm also feeling hopeful about, is that that relationship can continue to be worked on and there can be more and more working together coordination.
Well, I want to touch briefly on this new form of government that we've got, which you guys mentioned a little bit of. I personally find it pretty pretty inspiring that so many people signed up to want to be a part of it and to run for office. I'm curious, you know, looking at this form of government, what do you see as some of the opportunities and challenges that might come with it?
The old form of government was really problematic. I mean, one of the problems with giving commissioners bureaus is that as soon as you give commissioners bureaus, those bureaus become all important to them and everything else becomes less important. So, I spent about 4 years trying to get a local funding source for transportation, which surrounding jurisdictions all had, and Portland never did. And I think part of the explanation for that is there's only one transportation commissioner at a time. So the other commissioners, if Earl Blumenauer or Charlie Harrells or whoever wanted to raise money for transportation, the others are like, well, why would I stick my neck out to raise taxes for something that's not my bureau? So I'm very glad we're getting rid of that structure. I think that and this structure we're going to have, I mean, the multi-member districts and ranked choice voting is a bit different, but having a dozen councilors, kind of like, you know, Denver has 13. One challenge I think we're going to have is, for the first time, we're going to have a city administrator. I think getting good people to apply to be city administrator is going to be difficult because, you know, we're going to have to find some risk takers, people who are like willing to be the very first one in a brand new council with all new people. So I think we're going to need to hire the best search firm in the country, and the mayor and the councilors are going to have to be personally engaged in recruiting good people to apply.
Tiffany Koyama-Lane here. So I shared I've been a public school educator for the last 16 years, and the challenges of our city, of our community, they show up right in my third grade classroom. From kids bringing their dirty laundry to school because they don't have access to a washer dryer, to families bringing their utility bills in because they don't speak English and there's no one else they know to go to help them figure out how to pay those. I believe that we need to make City Hall a place of service for my students and their families and workers, all Portlanders. Over the last few years leading up to the big Portland teachers historic strike last fall, served as my union's lead external organizer, and that gave me a lot of practice with meeting with PTA members and teachers and students from all across the city and making sure that their voices felt heard. So when we were getting to the bargaining table as teachers, a lot of what was on our platform were things that were shaped by parents and caregivers. So many folks wanted to interview me during the strike, and they were like, how do you have so many parents with you on the strike line? And that's because we brought them in to that process through surveys, through going to PTA meetings. And it also was good practice for me because there were communities when we weren't really hearing from them, we went and asked them, like, found kind of the movers and shakers, the parents in the community and the teachers, like, hey, what do we need to do to get families at Tubman, like, to hear their voices? And so we heard really clearly, you need to have a meeting at Tubman. It needs to be after 7 p.m. You need to provide childcare. You need to provide dinner. And we had a lot of folks show up. And I really see this position as city councilor as a community organizer, making sure that the community's voices feels heard, especially folks that have been boxed out of local politics, that I do believe budgets are moral documents. And so that's important to keep in mind. I also will say, when I think about the strike last fall, which I'm not going to lie, it was one of the hardest things I've ever experienced. I have two young children myself. It was also one of the most empowering things I've ever experienced. When I look back on that, some of the biggest things that came out is that there's a whole group of caregivers, family members, calling themselves Families for Equitable Schools, that have seized the momentum that started with caregivers during that time and are lobbying their state legislators and are really pushing to get real change on a state level in terms of how we fund our public schools. And the other thing that I think of when I think about what came out of the strike is just that my students have a deeper sense of what they deserve now. When our classroom gets over 90 degrees, I'll have a kid raise their hand and say, oh, I see the thermometer, the one that my union bought. And so I put up in my classroom, and they'll say, it's time to ask our principal if we can be moved to a different space, different location. So just this deeper understanding that they deserve safer learning conditions is huge.
You're listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Don Merrill. We'll be back in a minute.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. I'm Althea Billings, the news director. In this episode, we're revisiting Running on Air, our Portland candidate roundtable series from the election times. We're hearing from the winners of District 3. That's Steve Novick, Tiffany Koyama Lane, and Angelita Morillo. Consider supporting the important work we do here at KBOO with a donation during our Catalog of Connections Drive. We're aiming to raise $75,000 by the end of the year. Can you help us out? Donate online at kboo.fm/give or text the word KBOO to 44321 to show your support for grassroots community radio like this. Let's get back to the show.
You know, I've talked to other counselors, candidates, who say they may be working with each other either in office or out of office, and they want to keep relations civil and friendly, like all of you. And that speaks to the ability to compromise. So I wanted to ask you, you know, what things do you feel, how important do you feel is the ability to compromise, you know, versus what fights will you definitely have, you know, or what fights will you save for another day? Considering the passion that you all feel for your own top issues and the support that you have from your constituencies that push you for the results they want, how do you walk that line of civility with each other and efficacy for your supporters? Ms. Morillo first, you.
Yeah, I think that the voting system, you know, you need 7 out of 12 votes to pass policy, so inherently you're going to have to compromise. I've seen that at the state legislature. I saw that when I did constituent services at City Hall. I think it's okay. I'm South American. I think we can feel passionate about issues and have an argument and then still get a beer at the end of the day. I don't think it's that serious. I will say, I think for me, that there are some ethical lines as far as someone who has been unhoused, making sure that people are treated as equal stakeholders at City Hall, meaning that if you are a multimillionaire business owner, that you are not being prioritized over our unhoused residents who are also our constituents and can also vote. So to me, that is, you know, I'm not going to compromise on human rights necessarily. I'm sure that I will be forced to. And the goal for me is...
Why? Why do you think you'll be forced to compromise on human rights?
Because if you don't have enough votes to pass policies, you're going to have to do the best you can with the other votes that you have. That's just what happens. And to me, it's not about going up there and playing hero and saying the most badass thing you can. It's about making material wins for people. And so there will be compromises, you know, and what I have told the public is that if you want me to be a progressive champion, this is a reciprocal relationship. You need to show up, you need to testify at city council, you need to call, you need to email, you need to do all the things so that progressive women of color that you elect have the leverage on the inside to do what you're asking us to do on the outside.
Over the summer, KBOO surveyed our listeners to find out their priorities for the election, and it centered around one basic question, which is, what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? And the one that came up the most frequently, of course, there's, you know, lots of things that people are concerned about, but the climate crisis was a persistent one for our listeners. So that's what I want to pose to you right now. Is that a priority that you share, and how would you shape Portland's approach to the climate crisis going forward? Let's start with Steve.
Yes, it's definitely a priority that I share. I mean, the great Green Bay Packers football coach Vince Lombardi had a saying, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. And I think it's not too far from the truth to say climate isn't everything, it's the only thing. Human beings have, it's not just the defining issue of our time, it's the defining issue of all time. Human beings have never lived in the world that we're creating by burning fossil fuels. I think that our focus has to be on reducing our own carbon emissions, and I think that the primary focus should be on transportation. The state legislature is already requiring the electric utilities to move towards renewables. I'd love to be able to ban methane gas in new construction, but the courts have said that we can't do that. But we can do something about transportation. And the Portland Clean Energy Transportation investments to be expensive, but the Portland Clean Energy Fund is generating a lot of money, and we can invest in bike infrastructure and pedestrian infrastructure and invest in transit, and that will reduce our carbon emissions, and it could also benefit low-income folks that the Clean Energy Fund is also supposed to help. So that's my highest priority. I also think that we should, I mean, it's not nearly as big a source of greenhouse gas emissions, but I think that it's time we had a conversation about food. I think that some folks think that if they're eating local, they're being climate friendly. The truth is that it's what you eat, not where it comes from, that primarily determines how climate friendly or unfriendly your food is. Beef is always bad, even if it's from next door. Lentils and chickpeas and sardines are fantastic. So one thing that I toyed with is the idea of actually requiring grocery stores and restaurants to post some information about the relative climate impact of various kinds of food. I think that that's worth considering. I mean, they're required to do calorie counts. I think carbon and methane counts are worthwhile too. And also, I mean, maybe we could, when everybody comes into City Hall, give them a great recipe for lentil soup and spread the lentil word.
Portland's lentil soup. I love that.
New York City is just about the climate friendliest place in the country because people don't drive there for the most part. They take the subway. They have housing density. You have a grocery store within walking distance. People are living in apartments and with shared walls, so there's less energy requirements. I mean, that's something I think that people need to get in. And Europe is much more climate friendly than we are, and Europe tends to have better transit and a lot of places sort of denser housing. There is something we can aspire to.
Yeah, I touched a little bit on this at the beginning. It's something that, like, I literally deal with. Tomorrow it's supposed to be 99 degrees. My third grade classroom on the second floor at Sunnyside Environmental School is in a brick building. The building turns 100 years old this year, and it's just not made for this type of extreme weather. So my classroom will get extremely hot. So I'm having to do things like buy an ice maker and give students ice that they can put on their face. Get spray bottles and spray the children with water. This is something that is not going to be ending anytime soon. And so we have to be really serious about taking this seriously and think about how we can make sure that we're more climate resilient. So that's thinking about our most vulnerable community members and making sure that they're homes are prepared. I mean, a lot of the people that died during the heat dome were housed, and it was that their homes weren't, you know, set up for these extreme weathers. So there are ways that we can make sure that especially our elderly Portlanders, people of color, have what they need to make sure that they can stay safe during these huge climate intense climate times like we will be experiencing tomorrow. We need to be thinking about large, bigger steps that we need to take and also smaller ones. Like on a bigger scale, we just need to be moving away from fossil fuels. We need to get serious about taking care of those tanks holding hazardous substances. And then also, you know, on a smaller level that will make a big difference too is making sure that we're meeting our climate goals through making it safer to bike, scooter, walk, take public transit, and be moving away from using cars. And also, I mean, when you think about like a bustling, fun city, you think about one where there's a lot of walking and biking, and you're not thinking about sitting in your car in traffic. Tree canopy is also a priority for me, specifically with an equity lens. Shade equity is really real. You can just take a bike ride from East Portland to Laurelhurst Park and see how different it feels. And we know that it's recorded that oftentimes in East Portland, it can be 20 degrees hotter than it is in other parts of Portland. Another important thing is making sure that we are protecting those Portland Clean Energy PSEF funds, making sure that we're really communicating with the public how those funds are being spent, what projects are happening. I have gotten the privilege of getting to see some of those up close from seeing some of these DPAVE projects,